If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like Arena Football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce this week. Lots to get to on this fine radio program as we will, of course, touch on the Raptors franchise record 10-game winning streak. John's going to poo-poo them again. That's what he does.
Like I'm going to be forever known about that on this show.
Well, at least by me.
Every time I'm with you.
Yes.
Where's Samet when you need him?
Somewhere. We'll get him in. Don't worry. Also, we'll talk about the Dennis Weidman suspension, which is real weird, to me at least. And Milos Raonic coming oh so close to his first Grand Slam Finals appearance. But, gents, it is, I don't know if you want to call it the official or unofficial midway point of the NHL season, because I guess by number of games played, it's the unofficial midway point of the NHL season. But we're at the All-Star break here. Everybody passed the official midway point in the season. So why not talk about the big storylines this season? And how about this for a starting point? Okay. Who's the cup favorite here? As we're through about 50 games of this NHL season, everybody played about 47 to 50 games so far. I don't know how you don't hand it to the Chicago Blackhawks, who are the defending champs and are still first in the very good Central Division. But, Gare, who's the cup favorites here as we head into the All-Star break?
Well, a lot of people will say Washington. I look at L.A. I think that they have the track record. They're rounding into form. I like their goaltending better than the other contenders, although
really?
Holtby's been amazing, but he hasn't done it in the playoffs before. It's easy to like Chicago too, but I would say that the one thing is Washington might be in a position to come up at the middle with Chicago and LA beating the hell out of each other in the Western Conference Final.
And that's why I think you got to say it's Washington, because they've got the softer conference to come out of. They don't have to play those other central teams, if you're Chicago.
Except they haven't done it before.
Right.
No, they haven't done it before. But, I mean, in years past, they've run roughshod over the regular season offensively, but of being a flawed team with questionable coaching at times. I think Barry Trotz is a great coach. I don't think anybody argues with that. Feels to me like this team has great goaltending, is not the flawed squad that it has been in the past. And I don't see them being a mirage. I don't see them finishing first in the conference and losing to, you know, an eighth seed team or whoever they're going to have to play in the first round, depending on the wild card system. But to me, they're the class of the East. And if I'm putting money down, I'm putting it on them because I feel like they have the easiest road to the final. And that's, you got to get there first.
Well, don't you need to see it from them first, too? Because they've got President's Trophies in their back pocket before.
But that's what I'm saying, Ben, is that those teams have those trophies, but they were flawed. They've also, you know, guys like Ovi have gone through the playoffs, have experienced that disappointment. There's something to be said for that as well. They know what it feels like to lose and be upset. And
we all know what it feels like to lose.
Yeah, some of us more than others. But what I mean is they've felt that before. They've lost before. They haven't felt what it's like to win other than maybe a round. Even last year, heartbreaking game seven again. I just feel like this team is built better than any other Caps team in the past and is hungrier than any other Caps team in the past.
What about the elite goal-scoring team in the NHL, Dallas Stars? I mean, nobody has the offensive skill that they have, right? Is that enough to get you through?
No.
Not that conference.
No. I mean, the problem with, they're a great team to watch. I mean, if I'm flipping on Game Center every night, they're a team that I want to want to watch. It's a high event game every time they're playing. The problem is there's too many events in their own end of the ice as well. And, you know, history has proven that you got to win with goaltending and defense as much as you need a timely goal here and there. And, well, I have no doubt that guys like Sagan and Ben could play well in the playoffs offensively. I don't think that they have the goaltending or the experience or the overall roster depth to really be much of a threat to any to either Chicago or LA.
Is that a problem? Like, should the NHL address that, that a team like, well, and you know what, we have to see it first. We have not seen this incarnation of the Dallas Stars in the playoffs, see what they can do when the rubber meets the road. But should the league, and you know what, I don't know if the comparison is apt, but I'll ask you. In the NBA, the Golden State Warriors can win an NBA title, being an offensive juggernaut, being an exciting offensive team. Now, their defense is underrated. People don't, casual fans don't understand the type
of. Unnoticed. It's not underrated.
Well, I mean, people who, yeah, don't follow the numbers or opponent field goal percentage don't realize what a good defensive team they are as well. But that's also an elite offensive team. And if you do have an elite offense in the NBA, you can go pretty far, and maybe you can win a title. In the NHL, I guess we've never seen it. Is that a problem? Again, I guess maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse, because maybe the Dallas Stars are going to run off this incredible back half of the season into the playoffs and win the whole damn thing. But it does seem like, yeah, we've never seen anything like that before.
Well, I mean, we did see it with Edmonton back in the 80s.
Right.
You know,
Grant, I don't know if anybody's comparing 2016 to
those
80s seasons.
Yeah, but I just think that the state of the game right now, this the run of play, I don't really know that there's that shot of the offensive juggernaut, with holes in its own end making... I think Dallas could get through a round or maybe even two.
Yeah,
but they're gonna hit the wall.
I mean,
probably not two.
For my money, there'd be nothing better for hockey than to see a Washington Capitals Dallas Stars
right.
Stanley Cup final. Do I think it's possible? Absolutely not. But would I love to see other teams building their game plans similar to the way that Dallas is, where we're gonna try and run you out of the building, a la the Golden State Warriors? Yes.
Instead, you have teams like Tampa Bay Lightning beating the Maple Leafs 1-0 in the last game before the All-Star break.
That's crappy teams, right? I mean,
one of those teams was in the Cup Final less than a year ago.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, we'll talk about Tampa Bay later, but
yeah.
I'm not excited by that team at all.
Well, but aren't the Florida Panthers building their team?
Yeah, I mean, no.
They're unbeaten when they score three or more goals this season.
And that's what I'm saying. The NHL, I'm not the first one to say it by any means, is a copycat league. Defense has been winning in this league since, you can go all the way back to like Marty Brodeur's New Jersey Devils, right?
And that's where we are again.
And that, well, yeah, we're back into the 50s with the way scoring is right now. And teams have been built around uber awesome coaching and systems, shutting down the other team's best players and goaltending. And would it be great if we got back to offensive-based coaching and offense-first systems? Possessing the puck is the best defense, and scoring more goals is how you win games, not allowing fewer goals. Yes. I would love to see that.
How do we get there?
It's gonna happen when Gary Bettman rides out onto the ice on a unicorn. I mean,
right.
Well, but I don't think it has anything to do with the Gary Bettman era. I mean, it's just the simple fact that like these players are all bigger, better, stronger, faster, and the coaches are better, and the goaltending is by far and away the best it's ever been. Like there are 6'8" athletes playing goal now instead of 5'9" guys who couldn't play forward, and that's why they ended up in net. There's still a lot of scoring chances. There just isn't as many goals. And there are a lot of teams that are trying to limit scoring chances rather than create them.
Right. So, I didn't expect to go this route, but it seems like we almost have to. Or at least touch on it. Are you not forced into a dramatic move? Or is the NHL fine with, hey, you know what? We'll play 2-1 games every night. Or do you need like a dramatic...
But the Dallas Stars don't play 2-1 games every night. And that's
right,
what I'm saying.
No,
there are ways to not play those games. But you have to You have to want to play high event games.
Right. You need somebody to break through in the playoffs to be, you know, the trailblazer that everybody follows.
Yeah, and it'll be very hard to do. I mean, the Washington Capitals were that 5-6 years ago, right? And they kept getting bounced early.
Right.
All I'm saying is it would be awesome if we did see a Dallas-Washington Cup final and then other teams decided to copy those roster makeups and systems, right?
I just don't think that Jim Nill in Dallas would, you know, in taking over that team, pictured this being their year. Like, I think their program is still sort of evolving. I mean, you know, and maybe they'll address the holes that they have in the back end. You know, like, he's done a pretty impressive job in putting that team together and building that organization.
Oh.
So,
well, even a team like the Anaheim Ducks with all that, you know, on paper, all that scoring prowess, now they play a low event game, partly because they've been forced to.
For Ryan Getzlaff, it's a no event game.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'll say this, like, Bruce Boudreau has, he needs to get votes for Coach of the Year this year.
Because totally changed his philosophy midstream.
100%. He realized that his team can't score. Ryan Getzlaff doesn't have an even strength goal this year. Like, he's got a zero shooting percentage at 5-on-5. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Bruce Boudreau recognized that these guys were not going to be able to score like they were in years past. They lost guys like Palmieri, who somehow is a revelation in New Jersey, so it shows you that maybe he wasn't utilized correctly in Anaheim. Carl Hagelin didn't work out. They shipped him out of town. But Boudreau has decided to play like the biggest trap game in the league and try and win every game 2-1. And they're actually winning more games now. So I think it's credit to him and credit to those players to buy in and realize we're not a high-flying team like we were in years past.
But it's a sad statement on the league, though, isn't it? That team with Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff, they can't score. So they have to, you know, kind of join the crowd. They got to do what you have to do in the NHL to succeed. And that's play low event, low scoring games, and it's working.
I will say, like, I'm glad things have turned around in Anaheim, because has anyone ever looked as unhealthy as Bruce Boudreau?
No.
Like, when at the start of the year, when things are going completely sideways for the Ducks,
his face is redder than normal.
Oh, he just looked like death warmed up. Like, I felt for him, and he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But boy, he literally wore their defeat, you know, not just on his face. I think it was running through his bloodstream.
Is there anybody that's kind of below in that second tier that we could see either making a big move at the deadline or having a strong second half and throwing themselves into the discussion? I'm talking about, like, maybe a St. Louis Blues team who, yeah, they're Stanley Cup or bust, obviously, at this point in that team's history and that team's development. The Rangers, we know the underlying numbers have not been great for them. They haven't had a real exciting season by any stretch of the imagination. We'll get into the Lightning a little bit in a second. What about the Red Wings, who have actually, you know, not taken a huge step back without Mike Babcock? Is there anybody there that stands out as a team that could jump forward, make a big leap in the second half?
I think the Rangers are the one. If I had to pick one, and I'm trying hard to see something in there, because I don't have a lot of confidence in St. Louis, but I just sort of think that the Rangers.
But if you have a goalie, you got a chance.
You always, like, no matter what. But
I think you're going to see St. Louis almost go the other way. Like, they're not a cap team; they're a budget team, and they're a team that has some big names coming up. I wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk traded away for younger talent that you can hold on to for cheaper for longer, because they simply are not able to afford to go to the cap. They're not going to be able to afford all these guys. They've got, I think, Jaden Schwartz is coming up soon. They just signed Tarasenko to that extension. That's going to kick in and be huge dollars. Backes is a UFA. He's their captain. Like, are you bringing him back? I mean, I think there's a possibility of shakeup there before the playoffs, just because they have to look ahead to the summer and to the seasons beyond.
Well, maybe this is a perfect segue then into the Tampa Bay Lightning, because they were rumored to be one of the suitors for Jonathan Drouin. Nothing's happened on that front yet. And Elliot Friedman reporting that maybe some teams cooling off after Drouin decided, hey, I'm done with the AHL. He's having a seat. He's not getting paid. He's waiting for the trigger to be pulled on a deal that may not happen.
He might be waiting a long time.
He very well might be.
We can pick this up on Labor Day, I think.
Yeah.
I don't even see him as like a...
Well, it's a draft day trade, right? Isn't it? Like, you know, somebody likes something that they see who's still on the board and, you know, it comes to somebody's pick and there's, you know, it just seems to me that's when it gets done. We'll trade you the number three pick from, you know, what was it, 3 years ago or whatever for the pick that you have right now because we really like this kid.
Well, if Yzerman is sort of bungling with Stamkos, with Drouin, I mean, he might just sit tight forever. I can see that not getting done on draft day.
Are there questions about him, Yzerman?
I don't know.
They're in a cup final.
There seems to be a lot going on in Tampa behind the scenes, which means there have to be questions about Yzerman. You know, I, for one, don't understand why he signed his coach who wasn't getting along, at least, if not personally, then at least professionally with the face of their franchise. How you sign that coach to an extension before you get your superstar inked to an extension is beyond me. You know, Drouin, I think, is a different situation than Stamkos, other than the fact that it seems neither are very happy with the way they're being deployed.
Yeah. Well, I think Drouin's getting some terrible advice.
Yes,
I really do. I mean, that's just not the way to handle it.
No, you put your head down and you play the best you can when you're given the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And then in the summer, you quietly go about asking for a deal or looking for a way to move up the depth chart in the organization.
Well, I was speaking to someone with a pulse of the Lightning room, and when Drouin was sent down, there wasn't a tear shed. There wasn't a voice raised in protest. I mean, to the players, it just seemed like a sensible move. Drouin's the only guy who's really, you know, taking umbrage with this, or his agent too. But I think there are questions about the quality of Yzerman's management skills in Tampa. And, you know, job one is to keep the face of the franchise, you know, on side, happy, you know, what, however you want to describe it. And if you lose him, I mean, then what are you doing as a GM? You know, you're not doing a great job. As much as he's done, you know, when he was taking the Russian kids, Namestnikov, Kucherov, when he was taking all those guys in the draft, people were scratching their heads all over hockey. They just could not figure that one out. And, you know, he was running uphill into the wind.
Yeah, I mean, Namestnikov has looked okay recently. I mean,
yeah.
Granted, he's playing with Steven Stamkos, which is probably going to help anybody. You'd know better than me, Garrett. I don't necessarily argue with the draft record. I argue with the way that you're handling those draft picks and you know, the culture that you're creating around your head coach. And it's a players' league. We all know that. And I just don't understand why you're not doing everything you can to keep your best player happy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's funny that it's Yzerman who's bungling this, right? Because that was his life story.
Totally.
Right?
I know.
You know, as he went, you know, the coach was there up until Bowman came along. The coach was there sort of on Yzerman's approval, you know, and, you know, you had to get Yzerman on side as a player and the team will follow. And really, I think that's the question now. Isn't just like, is Yzerman handling this well or mismanaging this? But the question is, who in the room is the straw that stirs the drink other than the coach? Right, you can't just have the, you know, K charismatic, air quotes, coach, the leader of all men. There has to be something, some leadership in the room. And, like, who leads the Tampa Bay Lightning right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you lose your captain, you know, in terms of passion and willingness to lead because he feels he's underappreciated and not getting the ice time or the situational ice time that he deserves, I mean,
put him with some line mates. Jeez.
Yeah, totally.
Well, that's been the story of the last couple of years, even in the playoffs last year, right? Like, Steven Stamkos not getting the ice time, not being put in the position he best succeeds in. I mean, they got to within two wins of winning a Stanley Cup, but...
I mean, it goes back as far as St. Louis, right? And bungling that as well. Stamkos hasn't had anybody to pass him the puck since Marty St. Louis left that team.
Yeah.
And when he did have someone to pass on the puck, he was scoring 60 and 50, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the guy that you want on your team. You should be doing everything you can to find him the setup man that he needs, whether that guy plays wing and you let Stamkos play center because that's his preferred position, or whether you find him the perfect playmaking center and convince him that wing is a better place for him to be.
You look at it, I mean, the rot probably goes right back to St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, that was definitely bungled.
He was the face of the franchise before Stamkos, right? He was their iconic player who'd been on the team since the Stanley Cup days.
He was the leader in the room.
He was the Hart Trophy winning, Art Ross winning at times player who went to the rink every day like it was possibly his last day of getting to the rink.
But wasn't that like a bizarre one-off circumstance where his GM had a say on the Canadian Olympic team, didn't pick him, and I kind of gave him credit for him. For it, I mean, if he made a decision separating, like, it would have been a lot easier to be like, you know what, he's maybe the last guy on the roster. Let's add, you're gonna get rid of a headache for me. You're gonna make my life a whole lot easier if Marty St. Louis on this team doesn't do that. I mean, that seems like kind of a one-off bizarre situation, or is that symptomatic of what we've seen with Steve Yzerman in his tenure in Tampa Bay?
Well, you know. Whether he takes him or not, I mean, he has to manage the player, right? If he's not going to take St. Louis, I mean, they have to talk about it and air it out, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that has to get sorted out. And, I don't know that St. Louis, you know, would try and leverage, you know, if there was an open discussion in advance of the Olympics. You know, I can't see St. Louis trying to squeeze Yzerman, you know? I mean, it just has to be talked about.
By all accounts, Marty St. Louis was not that kind of guy.
No.
He wasn't into leverage. He wasn't a me-first player. Every time I ever saw him in the dressing room or otherwise, he was crushed after losses, even just game 47 of the regular season, and elated after wins because he was a teammate and a good one. And I have to imagine that there was more going on behind the scenes than just that Olympic snub.
Okay.
But it sure set a tone, or yeah. It seems to have, for the past, like, 5 years, right? I mean, and we're seeing it now play out with the new iconic player, the face of your franchise, and all the crap that's swirling around him. He can't even go to the All-Star game without answering questions about whether he'll be back next year. You know, it's disappointing, and frankly, it's maybe not surprising when you look back this far with hindsight, but it's a bit surprising that Steve Yzerman, who has been hailed as doing a pretty good job building the roster, at least up until this point, can't seem to manage the roster.
Well, and all this doom and gloom, they're second in the Atlantic Division. They have 8 wins in their last 10. They're the defending Eastern Conference champs. And they do still have Steven Stamkos on their team for maybe just a matter of months. But is this a team that can still salvage this regular season, this season going into the playoffs, which we assume they'll be a playoff team now after righting themselves to a degree? I mean, it's there's still the 2015-2016 season to play out, and they're in a decent enough spot right now, Gare.
Their MVP is their goaltender, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they can win with Ben Bishop. I mean... I don't doubt that for a second, but there's just like a bad feel or bad buzz or whatever, like until the big business is settled, it's just going to feel unsettled in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and I think they caught lightning in a bottle last year too with the triplets line, right? I mean,
yeah,
and that's going slightly sideways.
Yeah, I think Tyler Johnson's been hurt for much of the season, and you're just not seeing the same production. And when you're not seeing the same production out of that line, that means you can focus a little bit more on Stamkos. And, you know, I mean, when the Jonathan Drouin, who's like your second best points per 60 guy at 5-on-5, isn't even playing for your AHL team, and, you know, Steven Stamkos is like number 6 on that list, and Tyler Johnson is way down that list. I mean, you just can't, you can't compete in the same way that you were last year. For me, they're not even a paper tiger. They're just second place in one of the worst divisions in hockey.
Yeah.
And they'll get a playoff spot almost by default because there are so many crappy teams in that division and at the bottom of the Eastern Conference.
The two best words in the English language, default. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Gear Joyce. Let's talk about some more sad sack stuff. How about the seven Canadian teams who are now, yes, all on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, which is real nice if, say, like you work for the company that owns the rights to the NHL playoffs on television in this country. It's not great. It was nice to see all those Canadian teams in the playoffs last year, though. And you know what? Who knows what the second half of the season has in store? Let's maybe start in the Eastern Conference with the three Canadian teams out there. Montreal has, I mean, boy, you want to talk about the most disappointing run in hockey since their incredible run to start the season and how important one player can be, seemingly, on one team. That is incredible. Who has, like, the brightest outlook of the three in the East? Like, is it obviously the Maple Leafs? The Senators still nominally hanging around the playoff race as well. The Canadiens do have the best goalie in the world, which helps, and when they have him, I mean, you're always going to be in it at that point. Like, who's got the rosiest outlook?
I mean, are you talking about this season or long term?
Long term.
Well, it's the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, they have a world class goaltender, a world class defenseman. They've got at least one for sure on any team in the league, top 6 forward, and Max Pacioretty.
He's not getting hit in the face with a slap shot.
Sure. Alex Galchenyuk is going to be a good player if the Montreal coach, whoever that may be in coming years, actually uses him the way he should be used, which is a center iceman in offensive situations with good line mates.
And you haven't mentioned John Scott.
Those are between the goalie, the defenseman, and the already in the NHL, budding star. Those are three things that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have. The Ottawa Senators have one of them in Erik Karlsson, who should easily win the Norris Trophy and should be getting Hart Trophy votes as well. But after that, they've got nothing on that team. So for me, Montreal is the easiest to turn around if you can figure out if it's about the coach or about the roster, or maybe it's about both, and you make some bold moves, which Marc Bergevin has never been about bold moves. He's been about tinkering.
I still get a feeling Montreal's going to slip into the playoffs.
I think so, too. I mean, I think they get their leader back, and as long as he's healthy and playing as he normally does, I mean, that just changes the entire psyche around that team.
Yeah. And like a lot of, in this plummet, they've been outscored when a lot of times when they've outplayed the opposition. You know, like they haven't seen really results, you know, that they deserve. There were at least three or four games that you're thinking, how can they lose this? They're out
opposite of a year ago, right?
Well, their underlying numbers this year have pretty much flipped from last year, where they were scoring everything off the rush and getting great goaltending, but, you know, being out possessed by a mile, and it's gone the opposite way this year. And a lot of people are pointing to either the tinkering with lines or the lack of tinkering with some lines by the coach in terms of sticking with the same guys for too long when it's obviously not working, and, you know, putting the wrong players, like Alex Galchenyuk, giving him like third line minutes. And, you know, so that's where the questions come. In terms of the systems that they're actually employing, if you're looking at it from a numbers perspective, they're doing much better this year than in years past, and they're just not getting the goal scoring. And, you know, that might be because they can't find the chemistry.
Let's go out west then. Look at those four teams. Winnipeg's been a real disappointment after the fun story that they were a year ago, and maybe some of the shine being worn off the excitement in Manitoba there. Vancouver's, you know, this team that doesn't know what it is. Are they rebuilding? Are they making a playoff push? Calgary was one of those teams that, you know, really overachieved a year ago. Maybe this is where they are, and rightly so, in this stage in their development. And Edmonton's without Connor McDavid.
I think Calgary is a real disappointment because their coach sucks and doesn't know how to use a talented roster the right way. I think that defense core is top five in the league, or should be.
Yeah.
The goaltending obviously is horrendous, and that's on the GM to go out and find somebody who can actually stop pucks consistently. But, you know, if you can't get more out of guys like, even though they're young, guys like Monahan and Sam Bennett, you know, and build a competitive 200-foot forward core around guys like that, I think there's something wrong. And I'm not surprised to see Calgary at the bottom. Or sorry, I should say, I'm surprised to see Calgary as close to the bottom of the standings as they are. I'm not surprised to see them falling out of a playoff spot. I think, again, much like Tampa, it was lightning in a bottle last season for that team.
It's funny, like 2 weeks ago, it just felt like you could throw a blanket over like five teams for the last two spots in the playoff grid in the Western Conference. And now just in this last week, you look at it, and you'd have to say Calgary has no shot. And they were only like a couple of points out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by Winnipeg too. I thought they were going to be, I thought they'd be able to build off of last year and be better. Like they were going to inject a little bit more talent with Nick Ehlers coming into the lineup this year. And it's just gone so sideways. I mean, even, you know, I know Pavlich got hurt early, but I mean, Hellebuck's been kind of a hell of a goalie for them for much of the season.
It's been amazing.
They just can't seem to get it together. Andrew Ladd's having a really weird season. I don't know if his pending UFA status is bugging him or what, but
he's at the top of the list of guys that can move on the deadline.
Oh, I think, I mean, if you're looking at that team, I don't think there's any question now that if you were at one point looking, it was either going to be Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien that you were going to sign or re-sign. It's Byfuglien for sure now, and you're doing what you can to get as much as you can for Andrew Ladd.
I always thought it was Byfuglien anyways.
But sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, he's the more impactful player on the ice. I mean, if you take into account off the ice, then, you know, you got to look. I mean, there's a reason Andrew Ladd's your captain, right? I mean, he's won cups before and all that. So, I don't know, very disappointing for me in Winnipeg, that's for sure.
Here's the good news, though. You'll be drafting real high if you're in Winnipeg. And you know what? That'll segue nicely into our next segment. We're going to talk about some of the up-and-comers and the risers and fallers in the upcoming NHL draft, because we have our draft guru here in Gear Joyce. So that's coming up next. We'll also get into this Dennis Weidman weirdness and the indefinite suspension after cross-checking, in quotation marks, a linesman. That's coming up next. Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Gear Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Dan Robson.
When you think Silicon Valley, what comes to mind? Google, Apple, Facebook? Sure, but probably not hockey. Yet the sport is actually growing faster in California than anywhere else in North America. And in the last two decades, the Bay Area has become home to one of the largest beer leagues in the United States. Think your Tuesday night rec games are intense? Well, I traveled to the sunny center of the tech universe to find out how Canada's game is on the rise. We're talking an alphabet worth of divisions with more than 4,000 players, many who suit up 3 to 4 times a week. We're talking about teams like the Nova Gretzky's, the Deeks of Hazard, the Bucktooth Angry Dolphins, all carrying on the time-honored tradition of taking recreational sport way too seriously. In our new predictions issue, we're guessing that your beer league has nothing on what's happening in San Jose. After all, When was the last time you had a chance to body check a billionaire? Careful, Canada. California loves your game, and it's quickly taking over.
Story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside Garrett Joyce and John Grigg. So it's on one hand, it's not so great if you're a fan of a Canadian team because all seven currently on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. But maybe the next 7 minutes will be positive for you because we're going to talk about some of the prospects headed into the 2016 NHL draft in the summer. And Garrett, like, nothing's changed at the very, very top. We're now through the World Junior Hockey Championships, the top prospects games played the other day on Thursday out west. Austin Matthews still playing real well in Europe. He's number one. 2-3, and then maybe there's a drop-off after three, but where in your mind are we now, and how much has it changed since the start of the season after seeing all the big competitions? I imagine the World Juniors and now the top prospects again.
The one thing I came away from at World Juniors is I think there's a chance, maybe a slim-ish chance that whoever goes 2-3 might be better than one.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look at Taylor Hall Seguin.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you don't know exactly how it's going to play out. You would presume that Matthews is the franchise guy, but Patrick Laine was like, I thought he was amazing at World Juniors.
How do you equate the Swiss League versus the Finn League? Like when you've got Austin Matthews, who I believe is leading the Swiss League in goal scoring, and then you look at the two Finns who are, you know, nowhere to be found at the top of those scoring leaders. I mean, you know, Baskara, is the Swiss League that much worse than the Finnish League, or is it just a matter of opportunity, or what do you
think?
I think
there's hierarchy, you know, with teams in the Finnish League in a way that, you know, the gate's wide open for Matthews with Mark Crawford in the Swiss League. So.
And is that about Crawford trying to prove that he can develop a young player as well and maybe get back into the show?
I would presume that's exactly what it is. You know, that Mark Crawford knows that there'll be a lot of people watching his team, a lot of scouts, a lot of NHL executives. And, yeah, he would be looking to get back rather than retire in Switzerland. But, you know, I just think in terms of the size that Lonnie has, you know, he's my guy as the one who might catch up to, or, you know, I for sure Matthews is going one.
Right.
I'm just saying, like,
the narrative has already been written.
Yeah. I'm just saying in 5 years' time, he might actually be the one. Like, I think he's got tremendous upside.
So who's going four? Like, is it Matthew Tkachuk hands down? Is that, I mean, he's the drop-off from those, the first three forwards, and then you get to, like, the Tkachuks of the world. Or is it Chychrun out of Sarnia? I mean, who do you think here?
I was hoping to see a bit more from Tkachuk at the prospects game. You know, he did not blow me away.
Why? Because he wasn't playing with Mitch Marner and Christian Dvorak?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there's a good shot that Chychrun goes there, but I know NHL scouts that like Ylevi, the Finnish kid in London, who was on the Finnish World Junior team, that think that he has been more impactful in the O this season than Chychrun.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it got off to a rough start, Chychrun, right? I mean, that whole team did, but, you know,
always does.
Yeah, but I mean, he lost the playoffs and the Ivan Hlinka to an injury and surgery over the summer or late last year and over the summer. I mean, kind of didn't get any action in until he came right out of off the IR kind of thing. Seems like, I mean, I was pretty impressed with his top prospects game. He didn't score any points or whatever, but he seemed like he played a quietly effective game. He was big. He could skate. He was making the good passes. And by all accounts, you know, the way he is, the way he carries himself off the ice is right out of like the NHL mold where, you know, he's mature beyond his years. I mean, I think you're getting a good player.
I'm mature beyond my years. But
I am not. And I know like Ben 80 isn't years either. Old.
Yeah, no.
So what about closer to home? Like, what did you think of guys like Alex Nylander? And, you know, there's news about Sean Day coming out this week from yeah. Damian Cox and about, you know, off-ice issues surrounding him. And, you know, for my money, I see Alex Nylander. The more I see him play, the less I feel that he is ready for prime time. He seems like he flashes skills, but doesn't play consistently, and he makes mental errors out there more so than some of the other top prospects, and I think.
I mean, he's always going to be compared to William.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, if you're looking for, you know, comparables, I mean, if your brother would be a good place to start. I think that his motor is a little more consistent than William's. But in terms of having regular impact, you know, in being noticeable on shifts, maybe not quite where William is. I see Alex Nylander as a top 10 pick, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't see him sort of slipping into the five. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so he's not slipping to, like, whatever that Penguins pick is that the Maple Leafs have. If the Penguins make the playoffs, and we could see two Nylanders playing next to each other in a couple of years here in Toronto.
Well, maybe.
No, I would say you'd have to be the Leafs pick, right?
Yeah, I would presume that William won't be playing for the Marlies, so I don't know that they'll be playing together in 2 years.
Okay. There's plenty of time to speculate and look forward to the upcoming NHL draft. And if you're a fan of a Canadian team, that's likely all you have to look forward to, although there's a couple of teams close enough to the playoff picture. When we come back, so it is the unofficial midway point of the NHL season. We'll have a look at our awards leaders at the midway point of the season, hand out some awards, and we will get into that Dennis Weidman story as well moving forward as we wrap up Sportsnet Magazine Live in an hour. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside John Gregg and Garrett Joyce. All-star break time in the NHL. So let's hand out some mid-season awards, shall we, gents? We'll get to our own made-up awards in just a second. But let's go and award the Hart Trophy right now because we can. Because that's the thing to do. We'll do the Hart Trophy, Vezina, Calder, Norris, and Jack Adams. So let's start with the MVP, the Hart Trophy. Is it simple enough to say that it's the guy with the most points in the NHL, who's been embattled, to say the least, out in Chicago, Gare?
I think it's safe to say that it's Patrick Kane's to lose at this point. And not simply because of because of points totals, but also, you know, you look at where Chicago is right now. He's the leading scorer on the best team in the league. You know, to me, that's a virtual slam dunk.
Well, the best team in the Western Conference, best team in the league points wise, is the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, I would still say Chicago's the best team in the league.
Right. Maybe competition not quite as tough for the Capitals, but is it a slam dunk in your mind, John?
I think it probably is if the voters decide that they want him to win it. I think he at this point deserves it. I mean, in my mind, the only other skater who's up in that same atmosphere is Erik Karlsson. I mean, I don't know where the Ottawa Senators would be or how far back of 29th place the Ottawa Senators would be without Erik Karlsson being like just a magician every night and just being the best defenseman on the planet, hands down.
What about what's going on in Dallas with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin? Because they're right there, second and third in NHL scoring with 58 and 53 points, respectively. Patrick Kane's like just in a whole nother stratosphere, 15 points up on Jamie Benn. But we talked about how the Stars are making a go of it as an offense-first team. And if you're talking about the voters, you know, it not looking great to see Patrick Kane's name on the Hart Trophy, is it possible one of those guys get it?
I think they split the votes. I don't know which one. I mean, Ben's the captain, Seguin's the outgoing face of the franchise kind of thing. They're both very, very good players, and they play really well together. They're on a bit of a slow streak right now. But, yeah, I don't think so, because I think that they split the vote, plain and simple.
Yeah, if you're just looking at merit, you know, I'm a huge Ben backer, and, you know, going back to junior, you know, on merit rather than sort of the you know, political breakdown of voting, I would look at Ben as being the one forward who might give Kane a run. As we come down the stretch.
All right, let's talk about the Vezina then. There's, I think, a nice little conversation to be had here where Patrick Kane seemingly running away with the Hart Trophy. I think there's a couple of guys you can make a case for the Vezina. One of them plays on the team that is the best in the NHL, in the Washington Capitals, and Braden Holtby. But the way the Panthers have played, Gare, Roberto Luongo is at least in the conversation. Is there anybody else other than those two guys, and who would you give it among those two?
I think Holtby is on the season so far. He would be your slam dunk choice. And I don't know if anyone saw this really coming. You know, certainly you know, if you go back a couple of years, goaltending would have been something of a question mark. And maybe some people would place blame on the Caps' disappointments and, you know, as lacking if not a franchise goaltender, like an elite top five in the league. But they have it in Holtby now.
No doubt. What about a guy like Corey Schneider? New Jersey's kind of hanging around that playoff. Last couple of playoff spots, a wild card spot. I mean, he's a huge workhorse. He's obviously excellent at what he does. I mean, for me, if you're looking at stats that go beyond just wins, I mean, he's right there. And even like super dark horse like Peter Mrazek, you know, to supplant the number one in Detroit and keep a young team, relatively young team, or at least a team undergoing a changing of the guard, to keep them also in the playoff hunt. I mean, those are two guys who I don't think either of them actually are going to win it. Maybe
no.
Schneider probably has a better chance, but two guys who I think are deserving of votes outside of Holtby and Luongo for sure.
How's that Schneider Horvat trade looking?
Yeah,
right now,
right? I am still flabbergasted. I mean, since we're talking about Luongo and Schneider,
right?
What happened with that team in Vancouver and how they turned those two guys? And even, you know, you could even throw Eddie Lack in there, even though he's been disappointing this year. How you turn those three guys
into a bag of magic beans.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Bo Horvat might turn out to be a nice player. But, I mean, he's obviously not I mean, I think he's being rushed. I don't think he's getting the right opportunities. I think it's tough to grow and develop as like a top six player when you're playing behind the Sedins and all that. But I mean, how you screwed that up to this extent, and now you're stuck with a Ryan Miller contract, and he's probably not even your best goalie on your roster, and is beyond me. Like, you should be fired for that.
Absolutely.
And who knows where they are right now? Like, that's such a team, like, in no man's land, the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. I mean, they're, and you feel for them. They're, obviously, they can't move the Sedins. I mean, mm-hmm. you can't move one of them, and nobody's going to take $14 million on, and they are the faces of your franchise, and all by all rights, they should retire as Vancouver Canucks for sure. But until they decline to the point where you can't just throw them out there in every offensive situation, I don't know that that team's going to get any better.
So we already talked about the Chicago Blackhawks probably having the Hart Trophy winner, the guy who's running away with the points race in Patrick Kane. They might also have the Calder Trophy winner here. Panarin, who leads all rookie scorers with his 46 points, 12 points up on Jack Eichel. Is that the runaway Calder winner?
I don't know if he's the runaway. It's funny because before this season, I sat down and talked to a NHL scouting director, and he told me flat out that Panarin could not play in the league. He expected him to not make the roster and be back in the K. And so that just shows you that that Chicago figures out a lot of things. They get a lot of things right, and have had, it seems like, a move like that every year when they're unable to re-sign guys, when they have to manage cap room, they always find bodies to plug in. This one might be the most creative find that they've had in this run.
I think the NHL would love to have Jack Eichel win the Calder Trophy.
Is he a looter in a riot? Like, somebody's got to score there?
Well, I mean, he's the youngest of the bunch, mm-hmm. right? If you throw Dylan Larkin into that mix, too. I mean, Eichel's the pure rookie. Panarin's like, what, 23 or 24?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been playing pro hockey for a bunch of years now.
It's the Sergei Makarov rookie of the year.
And let's not forget, I mean, Artemi Panarin gets to play with Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Eichel gets to play with Evander Kane, right? Like, there's a bit of a drop-off there. And, you know, there's no doubt that Eichel it'll be as soon as next year that he breaks out and becomes like a legit scoring machine in this league. And for my money, too, Dylan Larkin, you know, iconic franchise in Detroit. He leads that team in plus minus. He's kind of the guy that came out of nowhere. I don't know
it's
how
among league leaders and
yes,
plus minus.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, he plays important minutes and he plays, you know, he's been a spark plug for a team that people thought was going to kind of fall off the map a little bit at least. And, you know, he's just, I don't know how he kind of was forgotten about when the season started, but I mean, he has proven to everybody that he is part of that next wave of really, really good young hockey players.
Well, and speaking of that next wave, they got a nice young wave in Arizona with that Coyotes team taking a step forward. They've been kind of in and around the playoff picture in what's a terrible Pacific Division, but they got a couple of rookies closing in on the scoring lead as well in Max Domi and Anthony Duclair sitting on 32 and 25 points this season as well. I don't imagine those guys will get much love when it comes to the Calder voting.
See what happens with injuries.
Yeah.
Going forward.
It's true. It's a long season still. There's 35 games.
Is there a chance that Connor McDavid still wins it?
No. I guess he's blown his eligibility for next season too, right? With the games that he has in.
Well, assuming he comes back and plays, what, another 14 games, and that'll be it, right? Yeah. So,
but what if he has 30 points in those 14 games? No? Nothing?
I don't think so because, I mean, if he could somehow pull the Edmonton Oilers into a playoff race, I mean, then maybe. But, he would have to be all-world.
In his bare hands.
Yeah, he'd have to be all-world to get into the conversation, which is a shame because, well, I just, it's such a disappointing storyline.
All right, Let's talk about Norris, and you can gush about Erik Karlsson here for a couple minutes.
Man crush.
You love him. Man, you've already mentioned him like 10 times. Well, I mean, he's only been on the air for an hour and 15 minutes.
But I mean, he's just so far and above everybody else right now. And I think there's a big three in the league with Subban and Doughty. But I mean, Karlsson has, this season at least, separated himself from those two. Anybody can argue that, you know, Doughty is a better all-around player. Sure. Maybe Subban is more physical, sure. But when you can control play like Karlsson controls play, and with pretty much nobody around him to help him, and be like, what, fifth in league scoring?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty outstanding. And so for me, it's hands down with those other, with Doughty in there, and maybe Subban drops out of top three this year.
Ekblad,
I think,
gets in the conversation.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Ekblad, Doughty, and Karlsson as the nominees, and Karlsson takes it in a walk.
Yeah, he's been ridiculous. The 52 points in his 50 games with the Ottawa Senators. All right, let's make up some categories. Overachiever this season, going into the season with expectations, who's the biggest overachiever the 2015-2016 season so far, John?
Can it be a team category?
I guess. I mean, if we're making up awards, we can make up the rules as well. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to say the Florida Panthers. I think people saw them coming, but I don't think they saw them being having the second most points in the East at the All-Star break. Again, we talked about high event and low event games earlier in the show, and they play a low event game. That's for sure, and they've got an aces goalie back there, but they've also got some really good young players who are coming fast, and Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau. We just mentioned Ekblad. Big Nick Bjugstad is there too. We'll have to see if he can stay healthy. But for me, nobody thought that they'd be the leaders in the Atlantic Division, you know, even in November, let alone when the season started.
You got an overachiever, or are you on board with the Florida Panthers there, Gare?
No, I'm loving the Panthers as overachievers because, I mean, going into this year, you would have thought that Dale Tallon didn't have a lot of job security in Florida, and they've actually been able to they've hit home runs with their drafts. You know, getting Bjugstad in the middle of the first round. You know, the taking Barkov over Drouin. A lot of people didn't like
and
that.
And Seth Jones, right?
Yeah, yeah. I guess the other team overachiever somewhat. Although maybe the air is going out of it a bit, is Arizona, that they're even in the playoff picture at this point. I don't think that they're going to make it there, but I would say that in their long-term planning, they're a little ahead of, I think, where they would have projected themselves to be.
To go along with the Florida Panthers being overachievers, forgot to mention Jack Adams, like Gerard Gallant. Yeah, is he running away with it?
He's my pick.
Yeah.
I mean,
Trotz would be in there, though.
Yeah, I think so.
And no Mike Babcock. It's tough to be the Jack Adams Award winner when your team is tied for dead last in the NHL in points, right? Even though we all understand he's done a pretty good job, I guess. Or can you win it?
You can't win it. All I would say is that it is insane that he hasn't won one yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, very, well, I guess it's hard to say quietly in this city, but
no,
quietly, in air quotes, he's got that team playing much better hockey this year. But no, I mean, there's no, absolutely no chance that Mike Babcock.
The one thing that I would say about that, there's two ways that Mike Babcock could be the Jack Adams winner. One would be if it was a vote of the other coaches around
right.
the league.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is fat in their bank accounts and made their future financial prospects look so much brighter. And the other way would be if you made the Jack Adams a fan ballot. That would be the other way.
Couldn't John Scott find a way to win that one too?
Now that's a segue.
Yeah.
Like, you tell me.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in just a second. About underachiever. Gare, who do you have as the biggest underachiever this year? I think I have an idea.
Yeah. No, we talked about it earlier. I just can't figure out Ryan Getzlaf's season. We've discussed that. I mean, Sydney was down a quart of oil earlier in the year. He's sort of getting it back together again.
Well, he's got the Stamkos syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Like no one to play with.
Well, he's got it chronically,
yeah.
Right? Like he's...
entire career.
Yeah. So I guess he... Sydney with an asterisk, he's going to have a much better last 30 games than his first 50, I suspect. But I'm trying to think who else would be in that category.
I can tell you for me, and not necessarily through any fault of his own, but it's Connor McDavid.
Mm-hmm.
That, Gary, we sat in this room. Granted, it wasn't as fancy as it is now when we were doing that, but I think it was in October or early November, and you and I were both just gushing about how
they're the most exciting team.
You had to watch the Edmonton Oilers. Like, don't watch any other hockey game except the Edmonton Oilers. And they were flying around the ice, led by the Phenom, who had started slowly but was picking up. Like, it seemed like every game he was exponentially better almost. And then he gets hurt, and then the Oilers fall into this, like, the doldrums again. It's the same old story. It's like starting the book over. Same bad, habits creeping into their game. They're wasting a great offensive talent in Taylor Hall. He's just languishing on that team.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why they haven't pulled the trigger on something. I mean, the biggest move they've made this year is signing freaking Cam Talbot to a contract extension. The next biggest move is bringing up Darnell Nurse and feeding him to the Wolves in the NHL, where he is just getting destroyed by NHL forwards. I just don't know what's going on there. And for me, that team is the biggest disappointment story of the first half.
Pinning it on McDavid to me is a little unfair. It's injury.
I don't pin it on, I know, and I said it's out of his control, but what I mean is...
I think if you said Nugent Hopkins, that's another story.
I think he's talking about personal disappointment.
I just mean like the overall arc of the story is so disappointing.
Yeah.
When it started off, you know, pretty exciting. And we thought they were actually going to make, you know, new coach, new regime, new generational player, 40, you know, 30 games after that. Well,
they're
sitting
in the mix
here,
for Austin Matthews again.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
It is a joke. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, he's John Grigg, and he's Garrett Joyce. Okay, so we've said we were going to get to this a couple of times. I don't know if anybody has any diverging opinions on the Dennis Weidman thing, but I think it's kind of crazy that we're making such a huge deal of it. I saw it entirely differently than people who did believe that the indefinite suspension was warranted. Saw a guy who was real woozy, banged up in a corner, wanting to get to the bench no matter through whatever means necessary. Probably didn't even really recognize that he was about to run into a linesman. The linesman's going backwards into him, sticks his hands up, runs him over, gets to the bench. He's like keeled over, doesn't know really where he is, but he's suspended indefinitely by the NHL. Now, is there a need for the NHL to do this according to the rules? Like, are they kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place? I would think not, but maybe they are. Gare, is there any other way to see this?
I think they're going to drop the bomb on him.
Really? Like 20 games?
I think so.
It's so stupid.
I don't know.
This is a league that just suspended Alex Ovechkin and Jonathan Toews for not going to their ridiculous all-star extravaganza.
Right, and that's like that's written in the rule book now, right?
Okay, that's even worse.
Yeah.
unless there's like compelling evidence that Weidman was concussed, I mean, it's still, he has no history of stuff like this. The only thing I found in his history was when he tried to get Bert Templeton charged with assault in Sudbury. Or North Bay. I'm not sure which. But that's the only...
Sidebar.
Sidebar. Yeah. That's the only thing that shows up that's any sort of red flag. Not his game. Not who he is.
And it's the linesman. It's not the referee either.
He was
either
sleepwalking and woke up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, isn't that basically just what happened? And I don't blame the NHL in this case for indefinitely suspending somebody over the All-Star break, right? Like, it's, you know, like, they've got to do something. They have to react somehow when, you know, if that was a, you know, when your linesman, when one of your officials gets crunched from behind with a cross
check. And it's showing up on, like, Good Morning America.
You got to do something. I don't know that they're going to drop the hammer, though. You really think so, Garrett? I mean, I'm just like, I think
they will. I just got a sneaking suspicion. Yeah. And I'm in talking to, I mean, this will go to Pronger and to the discipline committee. And, they've got to be there for their on ice officials. Like,
but does anybody think it was like an act of malice? Like, I don't.
Apparently.
I could even if they came out and said, we just have to suspend him because he just did that to an official.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would make more sense to me than coming out and saying we felt it was an act of malice.
Well, yeah, the 20-game suspension. I mean, if you read the rule book, and Sportsnet.ca doing a good job of breaking down the actual rules and the mandate for suspensions, 10 games if it's an intentional act but not an intent to injure, like a spitting on an official. 20 games if it's an intentional act and an intent to injure, which I guess would be what the NHL would be saying with that 20-game suspension, Gare. I don't know how you. I mean, it was clearly, I guess, an intentional act. Like, he wasn't, just waving his arms around to accidentally smack somebody in the head. Like, he intentionally put his hands out. He didn't know where he was. I guess if, like, you're going letter of the law, I could see 10 games. 20 games seems like absurd. The whole thing seems absurd, but 20 games, like, I have a tough time wrapping my head around that one.
I think they're going to drop the bomb on him, and he's going to get punished for the outcome. Mm-hmm. Not the crime. It doesn't matter if it's murder or manslaughter, you're going to jail, right? So
I don't know. Speaking of that, I just watched Making a Murderer. Where's the motive? I just don't see the motive here. Like, why? It's the linesman. It's not the referee. Like, did the lines? I guess we don't know what happened previously in the game, but nobody's come out and said that there was some ongoing feud between the linesman.
The only motivation
Dennis
would be that he just got crunched in the corner,
yeah,
and is pissed off that there's no call coming, right?
Yeah,
and he's gonna take it out on
the linesman's not gonna make the call.
Guy. No, I know, but I mean that would be,
Just saw stripes? Or maybe
I don't
it was like
think...
some PTSD, like you fell into the zebra enclosure as a child?
Yeah. No, I think the easy answer is he didn't know where the hell he was, mm-hmm. and he woke up and there was somebody in front of him, and he moved him out of the way pretty quick.
I agree.
And, it's like when you're staring at your phone as you walk down the hallway and you turn a corner and somebody's mm-hmm. right in front of you. It's your reaction to do something. I just can't imagine that Dennis Wyman, of all people, was out to kill like that.
Yeah, it seems weird.
But it was sort of reckless in its own way, right? Like, if you're taking, let's take intent out. I mean, it was not, it wasn't unavoidable contact, right? It was avoidable contact.
Yeah, if your first reaction in that, no matter what preceded it, if your first reaction is to cross-check somebody in the back, then that is deserving of a suspension in some roundabout way.
I see a guy that's, like, got tunnel vision who just sees bench.
I agree with you 100%.
And then there's an impediment my way. Stick your hands out so that you don't get hit.
Or, like, I barely know where I am, and I'm just trying to get to, like, my home.
Yes.
So I can sit down and try and figure out where I am in this world, and something is in my way.
If they had taken him away and done concussion protocol and something like that, then there's an out, you know?
Well, it might have been the smartest thing they could have done, maybe, as an organization, was to get him off the bench immediately and into the concussion room.
Lawyer up.
Totally. Totally.
Make a deal.
It didn't happen, but.
Quickly, before we got to take a break. So it is All-Star Weekend. We're looking forward to 3-on-3. I am, because, all-star games are all-star games, and everybody's trying to change the all-star game. How can we make let's just accept what all-star games are. They're, nominally interesting for probably children who are just getting into the sport, who want to see the biggest stars, but you don't even get that this weekend in Nashville. A lot of them taking a pass, and you get to see John Scott take part in 3-on-3 in a couple of skills competitions as well. Gare, I know you have some opinions on Mr. Scott. I imagine you read the Players Tribune piece.
Yep.
Which was well done. I don't
By your brother-in-law.
By somebody. Who knows? So he's going to be there. Does that add anything to you, for you? Does it take it away? Like, what are your thoughts going into All-Star Weekend here in Nashville, 3-on-3 tournament?
The NHL bungled this big time. And, they were really disrespectful to John Scott, and the Players Tribune story just made the NHL look so bad in how they handled what was an awkward situation. Mm-hmm. Like, let's face it. I would suspect that we're not going to see fan balloting anytime soon in the same format.
Don't even take it seriously. Like, why is the league taking it so seriously? Because the players clearly...
Gary being Gary.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the problem here is that nobody votes.
Right.
Nobody cares, so they don't vote.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to let, like, a podcast or two and a Reddit page turn your All-Star fan voting into a joke, right? I mean, if anybody went out and voted, then this guy wouldn't be on the team.
You'd swear that the orchestrated voting, you know, it was put together by the commissioner of the commissioners of the three other leagues. Right. It's like, what could we do to make the NHL look bad?
No, but that being said, now there is a storyline, right? Like, there's now for the broader North American sports media, there's a guy who you definitely have to stick your microphone in front of his face, get a quote from John Scott. This is, hey, John Scott is the story. He's not even in the NHL right now, but he's the captain of the Pacific Division in the All-Star game.
You know what? If it were another journeyman, then it would be different.
Yeah, I can't get the thought of him attacking Phil Kessel out of my mind.
No, and that's the thing. It's the guy, not so much the phenomenon. You know, if they orchestrated a vote and Leo Komarov, right?
Yeah. He's in on merit.
He's in on merit, which. Which is another story, but if it were just some sort of career journeyman,
they've done it in the past, right? Like, didn't they throw out the Roy Fitzpatrick votes? Didn't like Zemgus Girgensson suddenly lose like a million votes or whatever? Like,
yeah.
I don't have any proof of this. That I'm just saying it. But if there was actually more fans actually voting, and you didn't give every fan like up to 10 times a day on the same IP address or whatever it is, like,
yeah.
You wouldn't have these problems.
It's true.
But more importantly, if you're going to let those problems be there, if you're going to give the fans a vote, respect the fans' vote.
Yeah.
At least don't make it like this big negative story when the fans that did vote voted in this guy.
Well, he is going to be there.
Whether they want to see him for good reasons or bad,
yeah,
they should be able to see him. And you shouldn't be trying to like shuttle him off to Newfoundland or whatever to try and keep him out of the game. It's a joke that way.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Ben, in that people outside of Canada are talking about the NHL right. All-Star game. You're hearing it talked about on like American podcasts, and it's coming up 100%. On ESPN, and he's on the Players Tribune. I mean, at the very least, people are going to tune in to see how bad he is. Hopefully he's not so bad, because it's not like, because everybody else isn't going to be trying. If John Scott's trying his darndest, then maybe that like it closes the gap like quite a bit. Well, right.
Yeah, the funny thing about the Players Tribune story, John Scott is, given his role in the game, is not a sympathetic figure.
Right.
That they were able to, that he was able to make himself, and the Players Tribune was able to make him a sympathetic figure. But, the idea that this guy has an engineering degree.
Yeah, that was what was interesting to me, like that he was so well educated.
But that's like Kevin Westgarth. That's like George Peros, right? Like, it's not the first time.
Stu Grimson.
Stu Grimson's a lawyer now, and it's not the first time we've seen these guys who punched their way into the league.
Baumgartner.
Sure, Baumgartner.
Harvard Business,
right? It's not the first time we've seen these guys punch their way to the league and be like the smartest guys on their team, or the most entertaining guys on their team, or the most beloved guys on their team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just think it's criminal what's happened to John Scott, not because by the way he was treated by his league, not by the way he was voted into this All-Star game.
And you wonder if the NHL realized what kind of a media maelstrom it would have created, whether they would have embraced it a little bit more early on, because, yeah, it is now a story south of the border. People are picking up on it, and it will be interesting to see what he does both in the skills competition and in the game on Sunday. When we come back, we've got to get to the Raptors, only because they've won a franchise record 10 straight games, And John Grigg hates that. It just angers him to no end. Not really, but
it's not fair. I can't talk.
I know. Well, you just did. But yeah, we'll give John Grigg some time to rail against the excitement of the Raptors coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Garrett Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of Free Association, a Raptors and NBA podcast. We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Gary Payton is in that movie.
Rumeel Smith?
Rumeel Smith. Right. Kills it. Okay. The trash-talking streetballer that takes on Malik Sealy. Great scene, Gary. You did it. You're the best.
You did it, Gary.
The defense is a little suspect. You can tell he's acting.
Hi, this is Muggsy Bogues. When I wake up in the morning, I'm listening to Free Association.
J.D., what's the Muggsy line you love?
I love your line, Muggsy, where you're in the therapist's office. It's like, but I love my mama.
Wait, did you have to audition those lines?
Sort of, yeah, it was, you know. You disobeyed my mama? Yeah, I love my mama. Kind of, it was in the script, and I just kind of went with it.
Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Chicago Bulls. You're listening to Free Association. Onions, baby onions!
Joined now by James Johnson.
If we're going to set up a pay-per-view, Dave and I are promoters. And you got to pick one guy who you're like, this guy is says the best chance, he's the best opponent for me in a fight.
Zach Randolph.
Sebo.
Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on Free Association and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis. John Grigg, Garrett Joyce here until the top of the clock. So the Raptors are real good. Really, really good. They've won a franchise record 10 in a row. Solidly second place in the Eastern Conference behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. Oh, and by the way, they have beaten the Cavs this season. 2.5 games, by the way, behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've beaten the Cavs at home. They've also lost to the Cavaliers in Cleveland. You know what? They've also been one of seven teams to beat the San Antonio Spurs. They've taken the Golden State Warriors down to the wire twice. They've beaten the Thunder on the road. They swept the Clippers. But John Grigg is not convinced. Oh, you should not be excited about the Toronto Raptors.
I'm going to have to stop coming back to this show during basketball season just because
I mentioned
my frustrations about the NBA in general on this show. What? Six weeks ago or something now?
Nah, it's not that long ago. But yeah, you're right. It's not fair what I paint you with. But I do agree that people should be more excited about this Raptors team than they are. They've won a franchise record 10 in a row. They did all those things I just said. They have a guy who's playing out of his skull in DeMar DeRozan and another guy who's the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. Injury caveat, I guess. Outside of that, in Kyle Lowry, I mean, this team you could easily see making an Eastern Conference final. The only teams that they should be afraid of in the Eastern Conference are the Cavs, which everybody should be, and the Bulls. They have trouble with the Bulls, even though the Bulls are not a great team, and lots of teams don't have problems with the Bulls. The Raptors, it's a bad matchup for them. Why can't we be excited about that, John?
I'm not saying you can't be excited. I guess it's an exciting time. I don't want to go into it all over again.
It's not like Eric Carlson or anything. Right?
I don't want to get all like negative Nelly again about the NBA in general. I mean, it's exciting time. The Raptors, they should win their first 7-game series in franchise history. They are favorites to go to an NBA or Eastern Conference Finals against the LeBron James-led Cleveland Cavaliers. And yes, that will be exciting.
Okay, that's all. That's as far as you'll go.
The other thing though is that right now it's all sunshine and rainbows, seashells and balloons, right? And you look across the way at Cleveland, right?
Yes.
And I mean
turmoil.
It's like it's a telenovela, right? Like it's basically a Mexican soap opera.
Yeah, and would you give them absolutely zero chance against the Cavaliers? No, I mean pretty close, I guess. But
hopefully, the Cavs can meet Boston and Kelly Olynyk in the first round.
Right. Yeah, and he can start breaking people's shoulders and
absolutely.
Elbows again.
They'll trip over his hair.
Yeah.
And for me, like speaking of Cleveland and the soap opera over there, like you know, we've all talked
All-Star
about
All-Star coach Tyronn Lue.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
I know. It's like John crazy. Scott. I mean. We've all talked about, you know, DeRozan, he's a better player this year than he has been for sure in his career.
Yeah.
And Lowry is, as you said, Ben, probably the best point guard in the Eastern Conference right now. And you know, if Damian Lillard was healthy, I think there'd be a good race between one and two. I don't know who it would be, but right now it's Kyle Lowry, right? For me, the big story that kind of goes unnoticed is Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
Who this year has had to integrate like an entirely new coaching staff that was foisted upon him during the offseason. Let's not forget that Dwayne Casey was like on the hot seat to start this season.
Yeah,
now everybody's pissed off that he's not the All-Star team coach, right? Mm-hmm. He's also had to integrate four new players. He's had to flip the script on turning this team back into a defensive team while not losing, you know, while not neutering its offensive stars. He's done a really, really good job of turning this into the type of team that could win in the playoffs rather than a team that can't win in the playoffs.
Well, you're talking about bringing in four players. They were his type of players,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, like, but he still had to integrate them into the existing roster.
And he's
right?
missed a bunch of them this season due to injury.
Yeah, and, you know, missing Carroll for a long stretch here it's obviously hurt the team, but not in the standings at least. But, I mean, even the way they're playing offense, there's more ball movement, they're more impressive out there. They don't look like a team that's going to go and jack up, you know, 60 shots and score, well, not even more than 60 shots, I guess, but they're just, it's a better coach team, better systems, better everything team. And I think Casey is kind of flying under the radar a little bit when it comes to that.
It reminds me of December, you know, a year and a month back, right? Like the Raptors were in the same sort of, you know, happy zone before last season when DeRozan went down with the groin, right?
But you could see the warts starting to develop on that team. And there was like, not unlike the, you know, if you look at you don't even have to look at the advanced analytics of that team a year ago. They never played defense. Like, start to finish last year, they never played defense.
Yeah, my only point is that it's as fragile as the potential of injury might affect this coming down. Like, the Raptors, they're easy to like, but they're harder to like if they lose one of their pieces. And it doesn't even have to be one of their two main pieces.
Well, but they've gone long stretches. Like, they went, you know,
Jonas.
Yeah. Without their starting center. They haven't had their big free agent acquisition really for much of the season at all. And when he was playing, probably wasn't at 100% because he suffered that knee injury in the Clippers game early in the year. Even the first game of the season took a pretty hard spill. And I don't know how healthy Damari Carroll has been all season long. I don't know. Is there an argument to be made that maybe they are like the darkest of dark horse NBA title contenders? And maybe this is the start of something that this nucleus, maybe not this year, but you could see an addition, a nice draft with that pick that is the next Nuggets pick next year. You could see down the line in a couple years being that team, or is that too pie in the sky? Or is that exactly what you're getting at, John, that you can never see it?
Listen, I'll say this. I think success breeds success, both within the roster that you have and within the way that you're perceived by the wider basketball world. If this team can get to the Eastern Conference Final and play the Cavs hard and go down in six, or, you know, maybe beat them, I mean, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. Does that mean that, and there's an All-Star weekend here and everybody comes to town and they're like, whoa, we forgot how awesome Toronto is and how, you know, it's not actually that cold here and, you know, we like it here. Like, does this all mean that more free agents are going to actually take Toronto as a serious destination? Because that's what you need to happen.
In a word, no. That's
so it's only New York, LA, Chicago. That's it? Like that, you know.
Unless your name is Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. Who knows?
In 2040 or wherever, yeah, but whenever I mean, he's a free agent.
If you can come here and realize it's a great place to live, it's a cosmopolitan city. Oh, and by the way, there are endorsement deals here because you can be the front man for an entire country, mm-hmm. right? Instead of just a city or a franchise.
There's magnet cities, and there are a couple of magnet players.
But there's only so many max contracts to go around, right? So, I mean, you got to end up somewhere. And, you know, that's my hope for this team because, as I've said and as Ben's alluding to, you can't win in this league without at least two superstars. I don't think DeRozan and Lowry are superstars yet on the same scale as, like, a Steph Curry or LeBron James or a LaMarcus Aldridge or a Tim Duncan or whoever.
They've got Drake.
So hopefully OVO Fest and the All-Star Game and the success of the Toronto Raptors on the court will make them a much more highly sought-after destination for, if not superstar free agents, then the next tier down who can really add pieces to the team.
That was as positive a spin on the Raptors I've ever heard from.
Listen, I'm enjoying watching the Raptors. I'm glad the Raptors are having success. I'm glad that Toronto has the All-Star game and fans can get behind the Raptors. I'm not blind to what was happening in Jurassic Park a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I see it. I see the building of, like, grassroots basketball in this city over the past 20 years. It's all there for the taking. It's just really frustrating as a basketball fan to know that unless one of these big guys comes here, you're not going to win a championship.
Yeah.
That's what gets me. So I'm hoping that all of this goodwill, good feelings, good performance on the court means that there's more for this franchise in the future.
It'll be fun to watch them down the stretch, no question about it, though. That'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. For John Gregg and Gare Joyce, I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.